Good afternoon, and welcome to the European Central Bank conference call. At our customer's request, this conference will be recorded. May I now hand you over to Mr. Rolf Benders?
Yes, hello and good afternoon to the hearing on the draft guide to changes and extensions to counterparty credit risk models, the ECMA guide. I'm sitting here together with François-Louis Michaud, Deputy Director General, Microprudential Supervision for the ECB. And the plan for this afternoon is to have a short presentation on the guide and afterwards engage with you in a Q&A session in case you have questions that the presentation itself is not answering. So without further ado, François-Louis.
Thank you very much, Rolf, and good afternoon to everybody. As you know, the internal model topic in the SSM is an important topic, and we made it very clear since the very beginning of our work that we wanted to, of course, implement the regulation and also run the monitoring of the models in the appropriate way. But also, we wanted to build on banks' capacities to develop and maintain their internal models. And for this, in the ECB, we have a division which is called the internal model or internal models division, which is responsible for this for the entire SSM. And of course, they do this also in liaison with their colleagues in the national competent authorities. And one of the first things that the internal model division did when they started working close to 2 years ago was to see what could be missing in the current landscape to guide banks in their development of models and also in managing and running their approval requests for new models. And this is the context in which this draft guide on changes and extensions to counterparty credit risk models has been developed over the past few weeks. So let me start, and I'm moving to slide two immediately. What is this guide about? As you know, just let me take a very helicopter view here. Banks have to hold capital in order to absorb unexpected losses. For doing that, banks in general use either a standardized method or an internal model to calculate the minimum capital requirement they need to have or to observe. An internal model then allows banks to more accurately capture its specific risk profile. There is added value when compared to what the standardized approaches can provide. If a bank decides to use an internal model, then any material extension for this model or any change to this model needs a prior approval by the supervisor, which is us at the ECB. Moving on now to slide three. For internal models, which are the developed for credit risk, for operational risk, or for market risk, the European Commission has determined relatively early what a material change is in a technical standard that's called an ITS or a delegated act when it's accepted or enacted by the Commission in practice. So we have some standards that define very precisely what is a material change for the main risk categories, which are credit risk, operational risk, and market risk. On the other hand, for counterparty credit risk and for credit valuation adjustment risk, how do we define a material change in case an internal model is used for those risks? No such standard had been foreseen in the level one text. And so this is not a surprise because in practice we know that those sort of models for those risks are not so widely developed and or used by banks, so which is why it was not foreseen in the first place. But still, there are a number of banks which are using such models, and there are also other banks which may also at some point decide or contemplate to adopt, to develop and request approval for such models. Then this is why the ECB, my colleagues in the internal model division in practice, considered that it would be very helpful to also provide guidance to the institutions we directly supervise, meaning that this is the significant institutions, on how to assess the materiality of extensions and changes to internal models for those two types of risk. Again, counterparty credit risk and credit valuation adjustment risk. I move now to slide four. The main purpose of our consultation today is to simply present and collect feedback on a guide which we have developed for the institutions we directly supervise. So in practice, the 130 almost institutions, which are the largest institutions in the euro area. In this presentation, we'll briefly describe what this guidance is about. Comments by the public submitted in the consultation should relate to the draft guide, which is also available to you, and not to the summary that we are presenting today. In case of doubt about the contents, of course, this is the draft guide itself, not the summary presentation, that should prevail. This being said, let's look at what's the structure of my presentation today. First, I'll briefly touch on Pillar 1 capital models, where are we starting from. Second, say a few words about extensions and changes to Pillar 1 capital models. Stop for 1 second on counterparty credit risk and credit valuation adjustment risk, and then dig a little bit deeper about this guide on the materiality assessment for IMM and ACVA, extensions and changes, the guide that we call EGMA, as you may have heard in the introduction by my colleague Rolf. First things first, as you know, institutions are required to determine their Pillar 1 capital charge. This is set in the capital requirement regulation, which defines minimum capital requirements for the main risk categories, again, credit risk, op risk, market risk, counterparty credit risk, and credit valuation adjustment risk. This capital requirement regulation, CRR, provides for methods for the calculation of Pillar 1 capital requirements. And you can, our banks, in fact, can decide as to whether they want to use the standardized approach, which was designed and devised by the supervisory community, starting in Basel, to develop that and then turn that into the regulation as we know it now, or whether banks prefer to use internal models. If banks decide to go for internal models, and as we said before, that might be sometimes better suited to their risk profiles, then banks need also to ask permission before they start using these models and before they start reporting the requirements, the capital requirements to the supervisor. Moving on to slide seven, material changes to internal models also require prior approval. As we know, internal models are not set in stone from the day they've been designed and authorized. This is a lively material, in a sense. They need to evolve, to reflect developments in the activities of the banks, refinements to the way of approaching the risk. So there are changes and also extensions if the business of the bank develops further beyond the scope that was initially authorized as part of the authorization. So there is a need for performing a materiality assessment, and the outcome of this materiality assessment should trigger a supervisory process. So in a case, and this is the first flow chart on top of the slide, in the case there is an extension or change to an approved internal model, first one needs to assess whether this change is material or not. If it's material, prior approval from the supervisor is required. If it's not material, a simple notification to the supervisor is required. That's the way it works for Pillar 1 models. Now, materiality assessment, as we understand, is the key thing here, and this relies on published regulation. So we have regulatory technical standards that tell us how to assess the materiality of extensions and changes of internal models in the case of credit and operational risk, in the case of market risk. But as we mentioned before, it was not foreseen for CCR and CVA risk. So this ECB guidance today provides precisely that guidance on these CCR and CVA risk for the institutions which are directly supervised by the ECB. Moving on to slide 8, just stopping one moment on the nature of those two risks. The counterparty credit risk first. The scope is, as you know, over-the-counter derivatives contracts and securities financing transactions. The aim is to assess the replacement cost of those transactions, which is not fixed. So counterparty credit risk models calculate the replacement cost in the event of a default of a counterparty for these products. This is done through a method or approach, which is called the internal model method, or IMM, and it's defined by specific articles in the CRR. The same is true or holds true for advanced measurement of credit valuation adjustment risk. I'm on slide 9 now. Here the scope is over-the-counter derivatives contracts and security financing transactions again. A credit valuation adjustment is the expected loss in the event of the default of a counterparty on such transactions. The value of the over-the-counter derivatives and securities financing transactions includes a credit valuation adjustment. The adjustment is not constant over time, as credit risk, as we know, is not constant itself. Then credit valuation adjustment risk measures the volatility of the credit valuation. Again, an internal model approach was defined to measure that. It's called the advanced method for the measurement of the credit valuation adjustment, or ACVA, and it's precisely defined in the CRR. So that's where we are. We know that we have methods. We know that we need to think about materiality, and now the question is, how do we do that? So I'm on slide 10. We've prepared a guide to guide precisely banks in their assessment of materiality. And this is what we called our ECB guide on the materiality assessment, or EGMA, for IMM and ACVA. This is a guidance which is provided by the ECB to institutions that we directly supervise, meaning the significant institutions, as they are called in the SSM regulation, not the less significant institutions, which are still being supervised by the national competent authorities directly. And the ECB only does some oversight of what the NCAs are doing in that field. So this is what we talk about today. This is really directed at the 127, I think, largest institutions that we have in the SSM. EGMA is structured along very simple lines, which in fact replicate very much what we've seen in the technical standards, which have been defined for other risks, credit market, like we mentioned before. So we have general provisions first, then we provide assessment criteria, and then we specify the documentation requirements. Moving on to slide 11, just to give you a better sense of the different chapters, in the general provisions, we explain whether extensions and changes can be classified either as material or not material. We explain that material classification must be based on EGMA, this guide, and also on ECB investigation. We also give references to other technical standards for the advanced CVA. Then we have another big part, which is dealing with assessment criteria. It provides a list of qualitative criteria that banks can refer to. There is also something about the quantitative assessment of new capital requirements and about conditions for the material classification of advanced CVA changes. And then in the last part, about documentation. Some details are given for the extension or changes, meaning expressing the needs from the supervisor's side, so what we need to receive if we are to assess properly those extensions and changes, so that banks know exactly what they need to prepare for us and what we are going to ask. And I'm now on slide 12 and almost reaching the end of this very short presentation, which gives you and presents a timeline. On the 16th of December, we started the public consultation officially, and we put the documentation on the website. Today we are the 13th of January, and we are having this call, and this is the what's called the public hearing part of the consultation, so that you can ask directly, or any party interested can ask questions directly if it wants to. And on the 14th of February, we'll close the public consultation. We'll look at the comments received. Those comments, again, need to be submitted by the 14th of February. They can be submitted via an email to the ECB or traditional mail. All the details are explained on the website. And then we will reflect on the comments received and then proceed to the next step with a view to make this guide now an official document of the ECB and something that banks know that they can refer to and need to use and when reviewing the extension, the projects of for extension or change to their models in these two risk categories and reflecting or preparing for the next steps when approaching us. So with this very quick overview, I propose to stop and hand over to Rolf, and I'm happy to take any questions that you may have on the topic. Just maybe one small thing before I hand over. We have also one annex on slide 14, which is a bit scary at first glance, but that in fact tries to summarize the different the exact steps and that banks need to consider when following the when moving into the moment they submit their documentation, explaining how this will be assessed, etc. So it's detailed information summarizing also a little bit what's in the document itself. And with this, Rolf, up to you. Back to you.
Thank you very much, François-Louis. Operator, could you please open the Q&A session?
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone telephone. The operator will announce your name when it's your turn to ask a question. In case you wish to cancel your question, please press star 2. So for any questions or annotations, please press star and 1. Mr. Lutz Weinert from Commerzbank, may we have your question, please?
Hello, good afternoon. Thanks for the introduction to this ECMA paper. First, a general question. I have a couple of technical comments, suggestions, and questions. Shall we go through them in the order of the paper, or how do you want to take that? Or shall we better provide then a written summary of this?
I think if I may, and I'm just jumping. I think the purpose of the consultation is precisely that you can provide your reactions and comments in writing. So this is the purpose of this call today is more to explain the general setup,
more to clarify things. Yeah, okay.
The space of what we are doing, why we are doing it, etc. Introducing the documents, but for the specific comments, we expect that we would benefit from receiving them in writing and
yeah So we'll do that. So I'm also here on behalf of the European Banking Federation, so there will be a feedback on this. Then I stick to the clarification question. Then maybe on section two, there is a statement that prior to implementing the extension or change, the institution waits for the ECB. So the idea is that institutions will submit their requests, and then if they're deemed material by the institution, they have to provide some documentation as described in the paper. The question is it intended that this waiting period is somehow ring-fenced or defined, or in other words, will there be some sort of a deadline for feedback by the ECB? Because for institutions, it might be a bit of a stumbling block if they face a situation that a material extension is pending and the time frame is not clear.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You mentioned, so I'm going to answer that. Do you have other questions or that I could take together, or is it the main one?
I have other questions to section four as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So please, maybe you can continue. I'll take them together at the end.
All right. Okay. Then on section four, number one, it is stated that extensions and changes need to be investigated if then there are those quantitative thresholds. So there are two. I just wanted to get confirmation that both need to be hit. So that means in the first day of testing, the 1% needs to be exceeded. And then and over the period that is described in number four, of section four, an absolute value of 5% needs to be exceeded, so both need to hold. So in other words, if only 1% is hit, then there doesn't need to be this investigation. And the second question on this would be how that 5% ratio applies to those 15 consecutive business days. So is it to be understood in a way that if on one single day the 5% is exceeded, so then the threshold is hit, or is there should there be an average, or should it be on every of 15 days? That it would be great if you could shed some light on this.
Okay, so first, On your first question about timeline, so what we expect is that you have your natural interaction with your joint supervisory team, where you also warn them in advance of what's coming, what's in the pipe for your extensions, changes, etc. So we expect that early, for like a bit around the end of the summer, banks receive, or GSEs, sorry, receive from banks a plan for what's going to happen in the next calendar year. That's what we've done in the past year, for instance, and we expect that to continue. So, in fact, then of course it can be your in your out updated and complemented through this ongoing dialogue between the bank and the GST, so that the GST has a clear vision in advance of what plans the bank, what are the plans of the bank, and then this allows us on our side to also manage the possible requests for approval when they come, and this allows us to manage our timelines and deadlines. And we are in the middle of working on that at the moment, and trying to increase our speed on this compared to what we've done after we took this responsibility in the ECB almost 2 years ago. But we are not in the process of setting very specific deadlines for that. We are simply saying that we will try to move as fast as possible, but a lot depends, of course, on whether we get the information from the banks also sufficiently ahead of the formal request, so that we can prepare and to process them. On your second question, I think the answer is yes, both need to hold. And on your third question, I don't have the answer myself. And I think this is exactly what you should submit in as part of your comments. When there is need like that for clarification, we will simply indeed reflect that in the guide as a result the purpose of this call. And thank you very much for spotting already those two unclarities or insufficient information. But I'm just, I think we should simply handle it that way. Other questions?
Mr. Stavana,
yes,
do you have any further questions?
For any further questions, please press star one on your touchtone telephone. Once again, for further questions, please press star one. Mr. Weinert, once again, your question, please.
Yes, it's me again. Thanks for passing me through. There is no reference in the paper to the IRB model changes, and the so the impact needs to be measured on total counterparty credit risk RWAs. So obviously, a change on LGD, for instance, also would affect counterparty credit risk LGD. So there is, in theory, that could also affect the measurement of counterparty credit risk RWA, of course. So the question would be, would it make sense to draw that line and then kind of explicitly state that changes on IRB models would, in a similar manner as a reference to the EMA market risk paper, would not affect those ECMA processes?
Mm-hmm. What would you like, in fact, to reflect? Sorry, more precisely, I'm not so sure completely. So indeed, yes, there might be changes in IRB models that have consequences on your management and counterparty credit risk, for sure. So what would be your suggestion here? I think that we handle this completely as part of the IRB change process, or reflect it also as an additional process need to be handled also in the context of the segment. We could clarify on that. I would be
sorry. I just a question. I think the intention is clear. I mean, if you say that there is no connection, then we may make a suggestion on the wording in the written feedback. Then, yeah.
I think it's a good idea. Might be helpful. Yeah. Thanks.
For more questions, please press star and one. Mr. Benders, Mr. Michaud, there are no further questions.
Great, thanks. So then that leaves me wishing you all, thanking you all again for dialing in, and just repeating what François-Louis said earlier, please use either email or traditional mail or even the common format template that we have on the web to submit your questions, comments in more detail. And that leaves me leaving you, wishing you a nice weekend, and till next time when we consult upon whatever guide or regulation we might propose. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, and a nice weekend to all. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
We want to thank Mr. Benders, Mr. Michaud, and all the participants of this conference. Have a nice weekend, and goodbye.